Coming up on Golf Today, Scotty leaves no doubt, closing out his magical season with a command performance in Atlanta to claim his first FedEx Cup title. Why did everything come together for Scotty in 2024? Rory McIlroy already looking ahead to 2025 and a change to his tournament schedule. Find out what will be different for Roars next year. And tomorrow, the U.S. and International President's Cup captains' picks will be made. We'll have it live. Who is a slam dunk to be in Montreal? Oh, wee wee. It's Golf Today.
Golf Today.
Please welcome the winner of the 2024 Tour Championship and the winner of the FedEx Cup, Scottie Scheffler.
Not to be denied his destiny, Scottie Scheffler in Atlanta adds a FedEx Cup trophy to the mantle. 7 PGA Tour wins this season, 8 around the world, including Olympic gold, got stronger as the year wore on. Happy Labor Day. This is Golf Today. Damon Hack alongside Eamon Lynch, Golf Week Magazine. The PGA Tour season has come to an end, and it was Scotty by a landslide.
And we have another whole 10 days before we wait until the FedEx Cup fall fires up again. Damon, winter has arrived in August in this game, but for a lot of guys are actually going to have a long, cold winter out there. You know, we're not going to see a lot of the top stars between now and probably January. You might get a periodic appearance, but a lot of them are going to spend a lot of time wondering how to catch this guy.
Yeah, it reminds me a lot of Tiger, height of power. You know, the guy's wondering, what do I have to do? Is it equipment? Is it time in the gym? Is it a mental approach that I have to do? Something different to chase down the best player in the world who got stronger and stronger as the year wore on. And think about it. At Bay Hill, he hadn't won on the PGA Tour for a year. Look at him now.
It's not just also the frequency with which he's winning, although he's setting a heck of a clip in terms of that. It's what he's won as well. Ooh. He's winning major championships. He's winning the Players. He's winning playoff events. He's winning signature events. The best that the PGA Tour has to offer week to week, he's the guy coming out on top.
Greatness is greedy, I once heard. What a season it was for the world number one, Scotty Scheffler. Let's look back, kind of a season in review. One that Arnold Palmer Invitational, beating the field by 5, didn't make a bogey in the final round, led the field in strokes gained putting, had a new putter in the bag that week, that mallet style really lit the spark for the rest of his season.
And that spark became an inferno. A week later, he won the Players' Championship, second year in a row. Despite needing some treatment for neck pain, began that final round 5 strokes off the lead, shot 64 Sunday, became the first player to win the Players in consecutive years.
How about that? Didn't wait to do. He won the Masters Tournament for the second time in 3 years, shooting 68 in the final round to beat Ludvig Åberg by 4 shots. Really ran away from the field on the back 9 with the victory, joined Tiger in 2001 as the second player to win the Players and the Masters in the same year.
We see a trend emerging here. Back-to-back wins, different jackets. A week later, he won the RBC Heritage, 4th victory in 5 starts, the first man since Bernhard Langer in 1985 to win the Masters, and the following week on tour. Led by 5 with 3 holes remaining when play was suspended Sunday, but he returned Monday morning, closed out a 3-stroke win over Sahith Theegala.
He was just clearing his throat. His first child, son Bennett, was born on May 8th. And in early June, Scheffler won the Memorial Tournament, becoming the 3rd fastest player to 5 wins by date in the last 50 years. And with his earnings for the win, broke his own record for most money won in one season on tour, north of $24 million. Of course, the great picture with the Nicklaus family.
There's a lot more where that came from. He won the Travelers Championship also in June to become the first player since Arnold Palmer back in 1962 to win 6 times in one season before July. Shot 22 under par, TPC River Highlands, beat his friend Tom Kim on the first playoff hole.
In August, won the Men's Olympic Tournament, shooting 62 in the final round to come from 4 shots back, entering the final round to win gold. Emotional moment atop the podium, heard the national anthem and started to break down, reflecting on the year. We were told that in this era of parity that all the players were the same. And in the post-Tiger Woods era, you know, Jordan Spieth had his moment and Rory's had some great moments and Justin Thomas. But here was Scottie Scheffler doing something that maybe we didn't think was possible, despite the fact that the ball kind of makes the players similar and the driver equipment maybe takes away some of the skill set and maybe they were bunched up, that it was easier to separate greatness when they were hitting Persimmon and Bellotta. But this is someone who said, no, I will separate myself from everybody else, led the PGA Tour stats in some 40 different categories, a seven-time winner on the PGA Tour, and you heard him say, no, I won 8 times this year. Yes, greatness is greedy. And I don't get the sense that he's going to be satisfied. And we saw it a couple times during this great run this season, some moments of frustration, a little, you know, slam of the club in the bunker. There's a storyline going out there that somehow he's just this mild-mannered Texan who doesn't really have any fire. No, no, no. I disagree. I think there is a very white-hot fire that burns within Scottie Scheffler that leads to great seasons like we saw in 2024.
Oh, yeah. I mean, he's the guy who wants to step on every other player's throat and then he'll give them the Heimlich maneuver when they get back to the locker room
right
afterwards. But it's interesting to me this year how he slammed the door on everyone else. You remember last year, we sat at this desk, we had conversations about how his putter was the perceived weakness.
Achilles
heel. For Scottie Scheffler in the game.
Yeah.
He was 161st on putting last year on the PGA Tour, and we sat here and talked about what it would be like if Scottie Scheffler, kind of, it's like the Rory McIlroy sentiment, you know, if he's just an average putter, everything else is good enough. And that's what we're seeing this year. And for the other guys who are out there, it's an interesting experiment they have to go through in the coming months to see what separates a Scottie Scheffler from them. And more to the point, do they see a chink in the armor for Scottie Scheffler? And it's very hard. You mentioned the 40 categories that he's led on the PGA Tour. And it's such a complete picture. You know, he was first strokes gained approach, first strokes gained tee to green, first strokes gained total, greens in regulation, birdie average, scoring average, keep going. And he's number one on that list all the time. And, you know, Tiger Woods sought to intimidate people by not just his execution, but there was the physical intimidation, you know, getting his body so jacked up, but also the aura that Tiger built around himself. You didn't see Tiger doing things like this after victories, really. He wasn't kind of cuddling the kids on the 18th green or placing them in the trophy as Scottie Scheffler was with the FedEx Cup and Bennett. But Tiger's aura of invincibility was very different from Scottie Scheffler. Scottie Scheffler is the guy who is just your typical Texas father. He just looks like a sort of middle-class, middle-manager, middle-of-the-road kind of guy, but he's out there destroying them week after week. And I was really struck by something his mother said to Rich Lerner last week when Rich asked her in Atlanta what was the difference maker, and her line was, Scottie is not his score.
Yeah, yeah. What a great 15th club that is, that it matters to you, but it doesn't matter that much where it will change your life. To me, the closest, I guess, comparison to Tiger and Scotty, and that's going to continue to happen, is the iron play. Tiger, height of power, everything was pin high. Tiger, maybe the greatest iron player of all time. Some argue Hogan, some say it's Tiger. To watch Scottie Scheffler with an iron in his hand, and we saw the bounce back after the shank on 8 with that gorgeous long iron, the 4-iron, onto the par 3 ninth hole to hit it to 4 or 5 feet and make that putt. Then to go on to the next hole and hit a 117-yard wedge to a couple of feet. That's where Tiger, to me, was from a physical standpoint. You can talk about the mental strength and the short game and never missing putts, but it was the iron play that could be so debilitating to his opponent. Scottie Scheffler's iron play is second to none in the modern era in golf.
I think that's a pretty fair argument, and thanks, Scottie, for that shank yesterday. It does give the rest of us some hope out there. Well, the PGA Tour season is officially over, so let the post-mortems and second-guessing begin. We get started on that with Rex Hoggard and Taylor Zarzar, a roundtable just around the corner here when Golf Today returns. It's time now for a Golf Today roundtable as we welcome in Golf Channel senior writer Rex Hoggard and Sirius XM PGA Tour Radio's Taylor Zarzar, both of whom are fresh from the sweltering heat of Atlanta. Taylor, I want to start with you. It's been about 18 hours since the PGA Tour season ended. That's enough time for a honeymoon. Can Scottie Scheffler sustain this next year?
I knew you were going there. Look, I think so. I'm not going to predict that he's going to win 8 times next year, but I do think that will he continue to be the best player in the world or one of the 2 or 3 best players, have a chance to win a major, win a handful of tournaments? I would say yes to that. I think the secret weapon for him is his attitude, that he consistently talked to Rex and everybody else in the media about all season long. And that's the unknown, right? Can you sustain that level of level-headedness throughout an entire year? That's so hard to do. I don't know that you can win eight times a year every single year, but with the consistent ball striking he possesses, I would expect him to continue to be winning a handful of times for years to come.
Rex, I have zero doubt that the right man won the FedEx Cup. But the question I have is the format right? The fact that over 72 holes, Colin Morikawa shot the lowest score and will be rewarded with first place OWGR points today.
Yeah, winning the gross division, I don't think really does anything for Colin Morikawa this morning. He's not looking back at that, but it was certainly an impressive performance. I'm going to use Scotty's word because I think that's really the best way to do it. It's silly. It's a silly format, but I always switch it back around and come to the tour's defense. We've done this for the better part of two decades now, tried to figure out how to have a playoff, how to have the big finish that the tour wants. And I was having this conversation earlier in the last week with Eamon Lentz. There was a time, Eamon, and Damon, you'll remember this, that Tiger Woods skipped the Tour Championship. Phil Mickelson skipped the Tour Championship. It was just another event late in the year that not a lot of people paid attention to. Now, they've created three events, and it's the big finish in Atlanta. And look, it's right at the start of football season. So what you're trying to do is get as many eyeballs on the game as possible. All the top players have bought in, and you give away a lot of money. Beyond that, again, I'm with Scottie Scheffler. It's silly, but I don't think there's a better system. And if there is, no one's figured it out yet.
Oh, there are plenty of better system options out there, Rex. That's a story, I guess, or an argument for another day. Taylor, there's always a lot to nitpick this time of the year, including always the sniping about the gross versus the net. I remember having a conversation with Padraig Harrington years ago when I asked him how he felt about the fact that Tiger wasn't there for two of his three major victories. And Padraig's line to me was, you can only beat those who show up. Do you think what Scheffler has achieved this year is in any way diminished by the absence of, say, a John Rahm or a Bryson DeChambeau or a Brooks Koepka?
Well, I think that the entire game of golf is lost because the game is fractured right now. But no, I would say no, it isn't. Scottie Scheffler's consistent performance shouldn't have an asterisk by it. And when you win eight times throughout the entire year and you beat John Rahm and in the Masters and in the Olympics, you come back and you do what he did in order to win a gold medal, I think that there isn't an asterisk next to his name because, by and large, when those players were in the field, he still was the best player in the game, and he proved that at least a couple of times when the game wasn't fractured in those majors and or in the Olympics. So I wouldn't put an asterisk next to it, but to your point, and I look forward to always getting my feed of you nitpicking everything that happens in the game is fractured, and I wish that all the best players were playing in the same place because then we wouldn't have to have these types of conversations. And I think everyone that's watching us right now is sick and tired of the game being fractured and wants to see all those people compete in the same place.
Eamon never nitpicks about anything. Hey, Rex, I want to turn this question to you because we've been talking for years about, well, there's so much parity in the game. When will somebody kind of step up and separate themselves from everybody else? Scotty has done that. What is his biggest challenge going forward in 2025 to sustain the level he has reached in 2024?
I just think the work that he's put into it. Look, we talk about the sublime ball striking, and it's been that way since he pretty much came out onto the PGA Tour. The difference from last year to this year is clearly his putting. The work that he has done with Phil Kenyon has really paid off. You look at where he is right now. He's 69 on the PGA Tour this season in strokes gained putting. That's about 100 spots better than where he was last year. You look at what he did last week at the Tour Championship. He was third in strokes gained putting for the week. Keep in mind, in his four previous starts at that tournament, he hadn't finished inside the top 25 in the 30-man field. That's what's gotten him to the point where he can be this dominant and win major championships and players' championships and seven times in a PGA Tour season. It's not easy. I think we dismiss it sometimes because he makes it look easy, but as long as he's willing to continue to put the work in with Phil, with his swing coach, Randy Smith, that's going to be the challenge going forward as a family man.
Rex, there was also the small matter of a $25 million bonus check yesterday for the FedEx Cup title that Scottie Scheffler won. That's technically considered unofficial money. When you add it to the prize money, the Comcast bonus that he got, he's north of $60 million for the year. If you're a competitively relevant player on LIV and you see that kind of money, which was unthinkable even a couple of years ago on the PGA Tour, when you see that, are you getting second thoughts? Even though he has to actually earn that money, it's not guaranteed.
I think there's certainly players over on the LIV side who are looking over their shoulder right now. And only because a lot of those players, when they went to LIV, thought that they was going to maintain what they did. They were going to be able to continue to play in the major championships. They thought they were going to be able to eat their, have their cake and eat it too. Now we're a couple years down the road and that's not happening, and players are struggling to get into major championships. Yes, they got paid, but you're looking over your shoulder and you're thinking, he did that and he can play in the majors. He can play in the Ryder Cup. He can play in the President's Cup. He has all of those things still. However, if you look at it from another point of view, those guys who went to LIV pretty much had all that money guaranteed. Scottie Scheffler had to come out this season and earn every single penny of that $62 million. So I think there's arguments for both sides of it, but certainly there has to be players over on LIV that look and think, I could have done that.
Well, there's earning money, Taylor, and there's also earning respect. One of the great moments in Atlanta, Sahith Tagala calling a penalty on himself, cost him roughly $2.5 million. How did that story play? Because we always heard the tale about, you know, Bobby Jones saying, you know, if you're praising me for calling a penalty on myself, you might as well praise me for not robbing a bank. How did the Sahith story kind of play on the ground? And what, you know, future might that be for him in terms of endorsements and just kind of the good guy factor that he always seems to carry week to week?
Yeah, there was a lot of chatter about it, Damon, over the last 24 hours, him calling that penalty on himself, as you see in this replay right here, which all of us, I don't think that we're able to view this and say, yes, that his club hit the sand, but he saw it and he said it did. And that cost him two shots. As your friend and colleague, Doug Ferguson of the Associated Press said, it didn't necessarily cost him those millions of dollars because you don't know how he would have played after that had he not received that penalty. But you're right. Still, it was a two shot penalty in the middle of all of this. He could have gotten number one in the world, or number one, I guess, official world golf ranking points, or as Rex said, he could have won the gross division. He was right there with Colin Morikawa and Scottie Scheffler fighting for that. Everybody was praising him for showing that kind of honor and integrity. And as much as I appreciate what Bob Jones said almost 100 years ago, I think we should always applaud somebody for making the right decision, especially in this day and age. And I think Tagala has won a legion of fans with the way that he carries himself, the passion he plays with. And I'll tell you this, Damon, I think he becomes one of the biggest stars at the President's Cup in a few weeks. You put that passion on display in a team setting, I think everybody that watches that is going to enjoy watching Tagala.
Rex, one last question to put a bow on these playoffs. By the time we got to the BMW Championship, obviously we knew who the top 50 were this year, and we can compare that to the top 50 who are eligible for the signature events this year. 31 of the 50 who enter the season will keep their status for next year in those signature events. That's a 38% churn rate of guys out of that top 50. Do you think that's sufficient to dispense with any concerns that this might have been a kind of a self-perpetuating system that once you were in, you couldn't be dislodged?
I have to give credit to the tour on this front. And talking with Tyler Dennis, an official with the tour, who had crunched those numbers, when they introduced this system, that was right about where they thought the churn rate was going to be, right around 40%. To actually, for that number to come through surprised me a little bit, because you look at the advantage that the players inside the top 50 have going into a season. They have such a leg up just to begin the year. They know exactly where they're going to play. They're going to play in events that largely don't have cuts. They're going to play in events that get so many more FedEx Cup points. It was hard for me to believe that you were going to have 40% roughly of those players to play their way out of it. And yet that's exactly what we ended up with. I'm fine with 40%, to be honest with you. That seems like a really good number. And we're in this conversation now about, now you start looking at 125 and the tour's even looking at reducing that number of fully exempt cards to 100. If 40% is the number of players that can play their way in and play their way out, as long as it's a fair playing field, which I think largely that proves that it is, I'm perfectly fine with that.
Well, from the FedEx Cup to the President's Cup. Taylor, I want to start with you before we get into who Jim should take and who Mike should take. Big picture, President's Cup. You were there at Quail Hollow. The U.S. is riding a 9-match winning streak. Does it matter? Does the international squad have to win for this to be a great event?
I think for it to carry juice, not only in this country, but around the world, sure, the international team needs to win this. And you mentioned being there 2 years ago at Quail Hollow. I assure you my living room doesn't look like this, so I'm at Quail Hollow right now. And it was a great competition here 2 years ago. And obviously Tom Kim stole the show. And if you have 3, 4, 5 Canadians that are playing well in this event in Montreal, I know that that will be terrific. Mike Weir, the way he battled and beat Tiger years ago was a great story. But in order for the world to pay attention to this and for there to be chatter throughout the year in the golf space like there is for the Ryder Cup, absolutely, Damon. The international team needs to win. And I would argue they have a better chance than they've had in many years to do it, given the way that those automatic players that you just showed on the screen a few minutes ago are playing. It'll be interesting to see what Captain Weir does. Does he value Canadian flags to make some noise, or is he going to go with better form?
There's an eye-opener there for people who thought that the grand backdrop we saw was the living room in Chateau Zarzar down at Quail Hollow. Rex, it's been 26 years since the international team won President's Cup, 21 years since they tied it. Does this tournament enter an existential crisis if we see yet another runaway or even close United States victory?
Yes, there has to be parity for these things to be interesting. There's a reason why the Ryder Cup is one of the best events, not just in golf, but in all of sports, because you have that parity. You have these matches coming down to the very last match on Sunday afternoon with the crowds and the excitement. You have to have that if the President's Cup is going to be relevant. And I don't like to say that. I had a long conversation yesterday with Adam Scott about this, and he had a level of optimism that I was actually surprised by. I mean, here is someone who has endured his share of losses every 2 years. It seems like his career has been defined by it, but he pointed out some things that have happened over the last few years. Go back to Ernie Els and when he was captain. He laid the groundwork for trying to create one flag, so to speak. He tries to create this one flag that the entire team can play behind, like the United States has. Our colleague Trevor Immelman took it a step further when he took over as captain, and Adam feels like they're moving in the right direction. And you look at the players on the team, you're absolutely right. There's plenty of parity, at least on paper. When you look at the world rankings, this should be close, but it hasn't been close. And I think Mike Weir is going to lean in heavy to a lot of Canadian flags because he needs that crowd behind that team.
Well, Taylor, looking at the United States team, what are the complications if Keegan Bradley brings both a walkie-talkie as assistant captain and his 14 clubs? Would that be good in case he continues to play great and wants to be a Ryder Cup playing captain, or should he just focus on one role or the other in your mind?
I'm going to put it back on you in a minute because I think the people want to hear Damon's thoughts on this too. But yes, absolutely Keegan needs to be on this team. You can't go – if he's not on the team as a player – then you're the entire week people are going to be saying to Keegan, hey, what do you think about the fact that you weren't picked, but you are a vice captain, and you got the call again that you weren't going to be selected? I can't see a scenario, Damon, where that is going to happen. Instead, I think vice captain Keegan Bradley needs to call Keegan Bradley and put him on the team. But I would ask you the same thing here, Damon. Don't you think there's way much more to lose if they don't put Keegan Bradley on the team as a player?
I think so, at a minimum, if only to see if this is possible for next year as well. I want him on the team just as a player. He's feisty. He's competitive. He's in form. He's a veteran. He knows the team. And it's good for him in terms of being an assistant, in terms of what load he would have to carry should he decide to be an assistant and play. And then next year, if he continues to play well, he knows what he can handle, what he can't, what he has to delegate, and what he can't. What do you think, Rex? Is this possible, or is it too much in this modern era to ask a player to captain as well?
I don't think the issue is a vice captain, a playing vice captain, because we saw Tiger Woods as a playing captain in 2019 at the President's Cup, and he didn't seem to have any issues with that at all as the United States team rolled to another victory. I think the bigger issue, at least from Jim Furyk's perspective, is how do you gauge Keegan Bradley's game right now? He won the BMW Championship, which kind of came out of nowhere. Before he won that event, my guess is Keegan was not on the radar as a serious potential pick. Now you're going to take one tournament that was played at altitude. It was a little bit different. I think that's tough for a captain. I agree with everything you just said. He has the passion. He has all the things that Furyk told us last week that he's going to be looking for. But you also have to look at the idea that there's a lot of guys in line ahead of him who are playing much, much better right now and have done it over the course of 2 years. If you look at the list, I think Sam Burns and Tony Finau are pretty much locks. And then you start going further down. Russell Henley brings everything that Jim Furyk wants. He has that passion. He's a good putter. He played well at Eastlake. He did all the things he was supposed to do. So I think it's a tough decision for Jim.
Taylor, doesn't the role of Keegan kind of go to the heart of this very issue of the identity of the President's Cup? Because you could make an argument that it should be an incubator for the American team's Ryder Cup success, which has been few and far between over the last 20 years or so, and that the focus ought to be more on, yeah, Keegan Bradley can earn points for the team and he's playing better than a lot of guys who might make the team on picks, but ultimately that his goal out of a President's Cup would be to try to tick all the boxes that he needs for success a year from now at Bethpage? Or does that diminish the President's Cup too much in your mind to turn it into that kind of incubator?
Yeah, I think that's a good question. I still think that you can get a lot out of the event by being a player and still, just through osmosis, learn all the things you need to learn in the next 12 months to determine who needs to be on your Ryder Cup team and what the identity of the team needs to be like and what kind of captain you're going to be. I think you can figure all of that out as you're a player. But I'll just go back to this again. If it's close in determining who needs to be on this team, if I'm Furyk, I go with Keegan Bradley for a couple of reasons. He just won. It will be a distraction if he's not on the team and everybody's going to have to answer, hey, Keegan's over here as a vice captain, but he's not here as a player. But the other thing is the passion, the connectivity that he has with the fans representing the United States of America and how much he loves that. I think you want that sort of thing out there on the field, so to speak. Patrick Reed was terrific in that role. Bryson DeChambeau has been terrific in that role. Keegan Bradley has sort of become that guy for the United States of America right now.
We will find out if Keegan Bradley is on Jim Furyk's American President's Cup team. 1 o'clock Eastern time tomorrow on Golf Today. Rex from home, Taylor from Quail. Thank you very much, guys.
Thank you.
Well, Rory McIlroy had some interesting comments on his schedule yesterday after the Tour Championship. Sounds like we could be seeing a little less of him 2025. More on that coming up next.
I feel like the tournaments came thick and fast, and obviously with the Olympics thrown in there as well this year, it sort of it condensed everything a bit. But yeah, I think it was obviously a great season. Hopefully Scotty goes on and finishes this thing off because he deserves it after what a year that he's had. So, but yeah, it's been a long season, and I'm going to just have to think about trying to build in a few extra breaks here and there, next year and going forward, because, I felt like I hit a bit of a wall sort of post-US Open and still feel a little bit of that hangover.
Sorry, how many strokes will you end up having this year?
27.
And how many is too many, do you think?
27. I'm usually sort of like a 22 sort of person. But again, that was when I was sort of in my 20s and didn't have the responsibilities that I do now, so I'm going to try to cut it back to like 18 or 20 a year going forward, I think.
Gosh, and two missed putts away from one of his best seasons in recent memory. Two missed putts away from being in the conversation with Scottie Scheffler and Xander Schauffele leading in to the FedEx Cup playoffs as a potential player of the year, and now saying he's going to kind of cut back on his schedule. Is this another Rory reboot, as it were?
I don't think so. I just think it speaks to how it's not a level playing field in terms of finding that balance between your golf career, your family, and your business objectives. I mean, he's played about as many events this year as Scottie Scheffler, Xander Schauffele, Colin Morikawa. They're all around 20, 21. They don't have obligations to the DP World Tour. They don't have to go play their home open as well. And there are some caveats in Rory's schedule as well. I mean, he started the year with back-to-back weeks in Dubai, one of which that he actually won was the Dubai Desert Classic, one of the most established events on the European Tour. He played in Dubai the week before, finished second, but that was basically as a favour to a friend. He's playing the Dunhill Links because it's his dad's 65th birthday present, and they last played there when his dad, Gerry, turned 60 that week, and Gerry also beat Rory on his own ball that week in St Andrews 5 years ago. And then you throw in the Olympics. He also took the Travellers out of his schedule along the way when he withdrew from there the week after Pinehurst. So there are a lot of moving parts in Rory's schedule, but there are at least a couple of events in there that he could drop without materially impacting what he does. But going all the way back to 18 or 20, I'm not convinced he'll get there, because by the time you do the signature events and the major championships and you throw in, say, an Irish Open or the Race to Dubai finale or the BMW Championship in Wentworth that he's also playing, then you're north of 20 already.
You kind of talked about almost like favors, doing this for so-and-so, for a friend in the Middle East,
or
time
a sponsor,
with his dad, or a sponsor, or Shane Lowry.
Yeah.
In Zurich, you know, playing.
He'd never played
with
that one before.
Never played. Is he?
But he only did half the work that week, to be fair.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. And he had a good time. They had some good meals down in NOLA. But is this a function of Rory needing to be a little more selfish? And is that hard for such a thoughtful human being to do?
Well, the last few years, in terms of the board commitment and getting involved as a spokesperson or an advocate for his tour, Rory McIlroy is not very good at saying no. And that was actually what was impressive about him changing his phone number right after the United States Open, when people felt entitled to reach out and ask for something from him, particularly members of the golf media, and he's kind of shut that down. So maybe there is a new Rory coming out here where he is going to say no a little bit more often. I just don't see a realistic scenario where it's going to be easy for him unless he starts to occasionally shave a signature event off his schedule, or he doesn't play, say, a Canadian Open that he's won twice as well. He's going to have to make some tough choices if he wants to get down to around that 2022 mark.
We'll see if a new Rory leads to a major championship in 2025. Stay with us on Golf Today as Scottie Scheffler's historic 2024 comes to a close. We'll hear from his peers on his incredible dominance. Can anybody stop the world number one?
Welcome back into Golf Today, Hour 2. I'm Eamon Lynch alongside Damon Hack. Damon, you were out there for quite a bit of Scottie Scheffler's season working the NBC golf broadcasts. At what point during this phenomenal run did you actually think, you know what, this is going to be a season for the ages?
Yeah, I've always enjoyed covering Scottie. I think he's gotten more comfortable, you know, the more wins he's had and the more interviews that he does. But I was struck by the quick turnaround from his first win of the season at Bay Hill. It's Sunday, you know, the putter has come alive. I interview him and say goodbye. You know, the Players is the very next week, you know.
You had to wait a whole 7 days for the next one.
Right, but I make the drive up, and on the Monday after, so the day after he wins at Bay Hill, he's practicing and grinding early on a Monday at the Players, a title he would ultimately defend. Mm-hmm. And I just thought, you know, there was, it's a short celebration, a little cheeseburger, you know, at Bay Hill, and back to work. And I was like, you know what? This is not someone who is overly affected by his great play. Not winning for a year and you're going back to work like that, it wasn't a long celebration. It was back to the hammer and nail.
Wasn't it at the Masters where Randy Smith was quoted earlier in the week, his swing coach? He was asked, what are you working on? And his answer was absolutely nothing. If that shouldn't terrify these guys, that a guy coming on a hot streak like Scottie Scheffler, undisputed world number one, and on the biggest week of the year, he's working on absolutely nothing. That's another trophy he walked away with.
What a great place to be. Clearly height of his power. World number one Scottie Scheffler continued his dominance on Sunday, winning the FedEx Cup for the first time after entering the Tour Championship at number one in the FedEx Cup standings for the third straight year. He held the lead in the FedEx Cup standings for the final 25 weeks of the season, the longest streak to end the season of any FedEx Cup champion since the inception of the FedEx Cup back in 2007.
And this is what the year-end resume looks like of those victories, including that Olympic gold medal from Paris. A major, a Players, and a lot of signature events. He's beating the best of the best on the PGA Tour. And after yet another victory, Scheffler's peers spoke about this historic run.
I don't even know where to start. I mean, obviously, his putting has been so impressive in terms of literal what part of his game, but I just think how well he plays when he's, you know, the guy to beat every single week. I don't think people understand how hard that is to do when you're expected to win, when you're the favorite to win, when every single thing you're doing is being looked at, good and bad, on the golf course. And how hard it is to get in your own little zone and own little world and truly just quiet the noise is something that is just as much of a skill as being able to hit a driver in the fairway or an iron online. And he's clearly figured that out very well.
Why is it so hard to do?
I don't know. I think it's the day and age we're in. You constantly have reminders, whether it's from people, social media. I mean, he's not on social media, so that definitely helps. You know, you're not constantly reading stuff about yourself or what people are saying about you. And I mean, all Scottie wants to do is just play the best he can and win as many tournaments as possible. And he's doing a pretty good job of that. just nothing fazes him. I mean, whether I was close, you know, and gaining some ground or he was gaining ground, it didn't change how he walked or how he played or how he went through every shot. And that's something to learn. I think his mental game is a lot stronger than a lot of people know. And it's amazing what he's been able to do for this entire season. And honestly, kind of over this past, 3 years now? It's been really cool to watch, and hopefully I can kind of draw something from that.
And I think by the definition of dominance, like I think that's literally where he's sitting. I don't know how many weeks he's been number one player in the world. I mean, since I've been out, you know, I think Dustin had a run, Brooks had a run, John had a run, Rory had a run. But they kind of, you know, they're kind of punching back and forth between 1, 2, and 3, you know. Scotty's just been at the tip top of the mountain for, what's 2 full years now, it seems?
65 weeks.
65 weeks, so it's pretty cool.
You have an incredible game. Not trying to disrespect you, but if there's one aspect you wish you could take from Scotty's game, is there one?
I got to look at the stat. I mean, when I'm driving it well, I mean, I feel like I can get him, but overall, I'd say he's probably got me in driving. Just his accuracy is really good when he needs to pick it up or kind of drop the speed a little bit just to hit more fairways. And I think this is a week that was like that. If you could kind of take some speed off just to hit a couple more fairways, it was something you're going to do. Kind of rock a fairway finder, whatever you need to do to keep the ball in the fairway. I mean, I was probably close to last place in fairways hit on a property that's got brand new greens. I mean, I'm just never going to sniff having a chance.
Is Scotty's consistency a part that you admire the most about him, that he's been able to do it for 3 straight seasons?
Yeah, I think his consistency, his attitude. I feel like he just sort of brings the same demeanor to the course every single day, no matter, you know, what position in the leaderboard he's in, or, you know, he's just, you know, he's amazing to just watch, you know, the way he manages himself around the golf course. And, you know, we'll look back on 2024, and it's, you know, obviously one of the best individual years that a player's had for a long time.
Roy, when you play with Scotty, is there just subtle differences between you two right now? Like, is there anything that you sit there and you go, man, he's just doing something and I'm not? Or, I mean, is it
more birdies than I do, and he makes less bogeys. Yeah. That sort of adds up to him being a little bit better right now. I think the one thing I've always admired about Scotty is the amount of bogey-free rounds he shoots. Like, if you look at, you just go back throughout the last 2 or 3 years, and you just look at how many rounds that he shoots that, you know, he'll shoot like 4 under par, no bogeys, doesn't look spectacular at all, but, you know, it's so solid, doesn't really put himself out of position. You know, when you don't make a ton of bogeys, it's, you know, the field's got to do something really special to sort of keep up.
As it applies to what Scotty has done, there aren't too many guys in the field who played with Tiger in his prime. Would you compare this to Tiger-esque?
Yeah, I think that's fair. I think all the stats back that up. I think the results back it up. It's been pretty incredible, you know, from really starting at Bay Hill, I guess. Yeah, I think it is on par with those great years of Tiger's. I think it's very hard today for anyone to separate themselves as much as Scotty has. I don't think we've seen that in a long time. I think it's harder to do it today.
All right, Eamon, we just heard from Scotty's peers. Now it's our turn. Fill in the blank on Scotty's season. It was
simple. That's the word that jumps to mind with me, because we just heard all of his peers there almost struggled to figure out one part of his game or his makeup that is outstanding or dramatic or tension-grabbing. Right. And Scottie Scheffler is the prime example of the guy who is greater than the sum of his parts. And the parts are all pretty good.
Yeah.
But the simplicity with which he goes about his business is striking to me. Leaving aside, notwithstanding the brief moment of drama at the PGA Championship earlier this year, the guy has been under the radar in so many respects through 7 victories and an Olympic gold medal this year, because he doesn't create a lot of extra noise around himself. He's not getting involved in PGA Tour politics. He's not worrying about board meetings. He may be informed about it, he may have an opinion about it, but he's not wading into anything that in any way distracts. And as evidence of that simplicity, we've seen players throughout the history of this game hit a speed bump in terms of their performance when they become a father, because they're sleeping less, there's more obligations at home, it's tougher to leave home for weeks at a stretch. That's all true of Scottie Scheffler. He's still winning out there almost every time he goes out to play.
Yeah, you say simple, I say relentless. You know, it's hard to back up great wins with more great wins. You talked about it at the top of the show. It's a Masters, it's a Players, it's Olympic gold, it's the signature events. When the lights are brightest, Scottie performed his best. And it also was the fact that there was never a moment where he rested on his laurels. And kind of talked about going right from Bay Hill to TPC Sawgrass and going right back to work. Greatness is greedy. It's Roger Federer or Novak Djokovic or Serena Williams or Tom Brady or Patrick Mahomes or Tiger Woods. They're not full. They're forever hungry. In this modern era, where we're, especially in golf, where so much talk is about the dollar signs and the number of O's, it's Scottie's great coach, Randy Smith, said he doesn't care. He couldn't tell you within millions of dollars how much money he's made in his career. It just doesn't matter. He wants to compete and he wants to win. If you're a sports fan, it's beautiful.
And a lot of those athletes you mentioned, they played in tournaments or against teams where it wasn't necessarily the highest quality that they were facing week in, week out. When you look at what Scottie Scheffler's winning and who he's winning against, to me, that's an enormous statement.
Yeah, and scary that they can't figure out what it exactly is. It's almost an intangible that Scottie has. Was there a shot? You know, the shot was his shot of the season. It was blank.
To me, it was the very first hole that he played that Friday at the PGA Championship. You know, he'd been arrested that morning. He arrived back at Valhalla 58 minutes, I believe it was, or 56 minutes before his tee time, which was all delayed that morning by various events. And he stripes it down there, makes birdie on his first hole. I mean, to me, that was a guy who's got an extraordinarily strong ability to compartmentalize his game. All of that stuff that morning, all gone. He's back in business.
He's on the ground doing some stretches in a jail cell, had an orange jumpsuit on. You know, kind of laughed at himself and chuckled because he never warmed up in a jail cell before, and went out and played great golf. And on Saturday, maybe kind of fell back to earth a little bit, but how he handled everything with aplomb and went about his business. And you often hear players talk about the sanctuary of being inside the ropes when there's trouble on the outside, whether it's an injury, whether it's domestic. You know, being back inside the ropes is somewhere where they're accustomed to be. It's their safe space.
Well, he certainly delivered, clearly, more excellent shots inside the ropes this year than pretty much anybody else in the game. I mean, you saw a lot of them in person.
Yeah.
What stood out to you in terms of the one that's kind of burned in the retina?
Yeah, he hit so many marvelous shots for this entire season. But the talking point at the beginning of 2024 was what was wrong with Scottie Scheffler's putting. He switches to the mallet putter ahead of Bay Hill and absolutely puts on a clinic. And he turned the page on this topic. I believe this is the 15th hole. Look at Scottie.
This gives you a little bit of belief, right?
I mean, this is like, okay, enough is enough. He was making the long ones. He was making the short ones. He ran away from the field, 1 by 5 at Bay Hill, went to the Players' Championship and backed it up. First player ever to defend his title. And all of a sudden, that talking point about the putter was put away. Bay Hill, you can ask any player on the PGA Tour, it exacts a pound of flesh from the players. One of the toughest golf courses they play. And Scottie absolutely put the hammer down with that club that had been befuddling him. He put that storyline to bed, and that tournament was the spark that lit this incredible season.
And so then where do you get to in terms of the defining moment of the career? Clearly, or defining moment of the year, clearly there are a lot of options to choose from, but can you distill it down to one moment that you think defined the Scottie Scheffler season?
Again, I think it's that PGA Championship and how he handled that Friday morning and the stress that he must have been under being in such an unfamiliar situation and to be able to not lash out really at anybody. He kind of went about his business. He tried to lower the temperature in a very hot button situation. A volunteer had lost his life on that morning. He kind of kept his eye on the ball in the most important situation. Someone had lost his life. And I just thought he handled himself the way he handles everything. That's why I think success is never going to be too big for him or too much. And I think that's why setback and disappointment is not. He's incredibly level. And for an athlete at the highest, highest reaches of this game to not be like this and to be like this, to me, that was the defining moment, how he handled the remarkable stress of being arrested at Valhalla.
I'd have to agree with you on that. And there were a lot of people who didn't handle that stress very well. There were some elements of golf media embarrassed themselves that morning by raging that the mayor must get down there to sort this out, or where's the police chief, or the idea that, you know, the Grand Slam is on the line. He's got a tee time in a major. He's a model citizen.
Yeah.
None of which Scottie Scheffler ever actually said. And to me, the moment that defined Scottie Scheffler was he gets back to the clubhouse, shoots a great round of golf, puts himself in contention in the tournament after all of that, does a press conference afterwards, owns every aspect of what happened, didn't lash out at a cop or anyone else. And he was the guy who kept referring to John Mills. John Mills being the volunteer who died. And he constantly referred to him by name.
Yeah.
And he never lost sight of what actually mattered that season. And a lot of other people lost sight of what mattered that morning. Scottie Scheffler wasn't one of them.
What an incredible year. You become a father. You have this breakout season on the PGA Tour. You are arrested, you know, before the second round of
the major. What hope does it give the rest of the guys that cops can't even get in the way of you having a balanced, you know, accomplished season that puts you on a list with Tiger Woods?
I do hope at one point Scottie writes a book about the year 2024.
So let's welcome in for our Golf Today roundtable our Golf Week senior writer Bethan Nichols and Golf Channel contributor Ron Syrak. Ron, I want to start with you. Jin Young Ko didn't get the win yesterday, but multiple major winner, former world number one. Is she finally starting to get a little bit of mojo back?
You know, she looked like she was close, but I always thought the strength of Jin Young's game was that she never made mistakes. She let other people make the mistakes, but we saw her making them down the stretch yesterday. She lost confidence in her driver after a couple of pull hooks, and that was the missing piece. But I think in terms of the overall state of her game, she's as close as she's been in a while now.
What do you think, Bethan? Time was it was a Nelly slash Jin Young Ko world. Do you expect her to get back on the good foot and join the likes of Nelly and Lydia and Lilia Vu in that battle for dominance on the LPGA Tour?
Yeah, you know, I think there's just too much good in Jin Young Ko's game for her to stay out of that battle very long, you know. But I think when you look at ball striking, when she was peak Jin Young, she was number one on the tour in greens and regulation. And right now she's 40th. So, you know, to Ron's point, she has struggled with some consistency, you know, through her bag. And, you know, I do think, though, that with a little bit of confidence, you know, she'll get back in there. She's been battling injuries, a variety of injuries over the course of the years. And I just think that's held her back.
Bethan, before we get to the Solheim Cup, I want to talk about a former Solheim Cup captain, Katrina Mathieu, captained the Curtis Cup team to that victory at Sunningdale over the weekend. You don't normally see that. You don't see a veteran professional captain a women's amateur team. That's often taken by veteran women amateurs. Is that something you'd like to see more often in terms of the experience that a respected and well-known professional player could bring to the young women on those teams?
Absolutely. And I think for two reasons. Number one, they're going to run out of amateurs to choose from because there aren't very many players who are, you know, staying amateur from that high caliber of player. Obviously, we see, you know, a player like Rachel Heck making that decision. But, you know, I think from a practical standpoint, they need to tap into the professionals. And I think that GB and I made a great decision in choosing Katrina Mathieu. You know, she's going to be the perfect person to help prepare these players for the next level. I also think that they'll have a resource in Katrina for years to come. And she's such a calming presence out there that, and she has such a great head on her shoulders in terms of strategy that it really gave GB and I think a little bit of an extra boost, because there's no question that she has a lot more experience in her back pocket than Megan Stassi did.
Well, you guys know, Ron, in sports, momentum can be hard to sustain. But do you think the European Solheim Cup team could get a boost from GB and I's victory in the Curtis Cup?
Yeah, you know, there's definitely an upswing here. I mean, look, since that 2011 incredible comeback at Killeen Castle, Europe's got 4 wins, 2 losses, and a tie. The upswing is definitely there. And I think they have to look at that, at what happened with the Curtis Cup as inspiration. And I know, Beth Ann, this is probably near and dear to your heart, but part of the strength of that Curtis Cup team is how many of those players hone their game in American college golf, which just shows you how strong the women's college golf has become here. And we're seeing more European women. You know, both of the Rhodes sisters are playing here. Lottie Wode, Hannah Darling, they're all playing women's college golf in the U.S. They've got that strength there. And we got some of that on the Solheim Cup team, too. So it is, I believe, 8 of the 12 have played college golf here.
Beth Ann, every time a team event comes around, we start to talk about who's under pressure. Is a captain under pressure to deliver? Captain's picks under pressure? Star players under pressure? Obviously, Nelly is going to be the anchor of the United States team next week for Stacey Lewis. Is there anyone that you see has a little bit of extra scrutiny on them in terms of delivering on their promise or the opportunity they've been given here?
Well, I do think Lilia Vu had a disappointing Solheim Cup last year, you know, and is the world number two. I think, you know, both Nelly and Lilia will be called upon for Team USA to deliver in a big way. You know, I think Lexi Thompson might be feeling a little bit of that, even though I think she was a no-brainer for a captain's pick. I think anytime you're a pick, you know, you do carry a little bit of extra weight. And I think Stacey Lewis is going to feel it, you know, having this charge 2 years in a row with the U.S., you know, not winning since 2017, which is absolutely remarkable. When you look at the depth of the team, you look at how many Americans are winning on the LPGA this year compared to only one on the European side. And that player, Linnea Ström, isn't even on Suzanne Pedersen's team. So, you know, when you look at it that way, there really should be no excuse on home soil for Team USA not to come out victorious. But I do think that the Europeans, as we see on the men's side, do such a great job of bringing their team together and creating that family atmosphere, that all-for-one, leave-the-ego-aside atmosphere that we even heard Katrina Mathew talk about with the Curtis Cup.
Ron, how about for you? A player or two you think is going to show up and show out next week at the Solheim Cup?
Well, I think that Beth Ann's right on with Lexi, but Lexi sort of got a pass here because this is a lifetime achievement award for her to be in there. For Nelly, this is a way to bounce back from what's been a disappointing second half of the season for her. And on the European side, there's just so much experience there. There's absolutely, they've got 4 players who've played in more than 3 Solheim Cups. The Americans have only Lexi. So you're going to look for that leadership like Anna Nordqvist, Carlotta Sanganda, Charlie Hall. The pressure is going to be on them to show the leadership.
RTJ, a beautiful spot. Going to look wonderful on TV. Ron, Beth Ann, can't wait for next week. Thanks so much for your time.
Talk to you later.